The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Well, greetings one and all, greetings family, and welcome to another episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. We are unpacking the Grapevine Writings articles of Bill W. from 1944 to 1970 out of the book of the same name of the show, The Language of the Heart. And with me right now, of course, is our co-host, Mr. Chris S. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Monty, how's it going? I hope your holidays and Christmas and everything were really good.
Yeah, very, very busy time, but we had a lot of fun, had a lot of good time with family and friends, and now we're moving forward into yet another year. I was thinking about when I was in college, we were all talking about what would happen when we reached 1984. And now here we are at 2023.
I remember that. I read the book 1984 in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, it's going to be bad.
Right.
And now 1984 is so long ago.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what are we doing this week, buddy?
Man. All right. You know, we're going to be talking about Tradition 9 and Tradition 10. And these, of course, are from The Language of the Heart. Tradition 9 was August 1948, and Tradition 10 was September 1948. Now, it was suggested by one of our listeners that we read the tradition as it's in the long form as it is accepted today, just to kind of create the correct context before we delve into to the earlier writing, because Bill was kind of developing these. There was more editing to do. There was more, he wanted to make them a little bit more concise as time went on. So I'm going to read Tradition 9 from the long form as it's accepted today. So it says, each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or inner group committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office in New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. So that's Tradition 9 out of the long form. And I don't know about you, Monty, but some of the groups that I've been a part of, they haven't been very organized. and then there, you know, there are some groups. There's some groups that are really organized. You know, I've been a guest at some groups where there's 50 commitments. You know, there's four coffee makers, and there's greeters at the door, and there's literature people, and there's cleanup crews, and it goes on and on and on. And the least possible organization that you can get away with, I really think is better. Now, not to be, you know, so unorganized that nobody's there with a key and the coffee isn't made and you know, but there has to be some organization. But I don't know. I've seen that this tradition really, you know, really is wise in that we don't want to over-organize. You know, we don't want to get so mechanical that we miss the spiritual. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've seen the same thing. And actually, some of the most spiritual in nature meetings I've attended have been ones that you wonder how they make it. You know, I mean, things seem pretty unorganized, and yet you walk out of there, it's like, wow, that was an amazing hour and a half, you know? So I'm with you.
Sometimes people forget to leave room for God. Mm. I see that happening a lot, you know? All right, so let's get started. We're gonna start on Tradition 9. This was Bill's article in The Grapevine from August 1948. It says, "The least possible organization, that's our universal ideal. No fees, no dues, no rules imposed by anybody. One alcoholic bringing recovery to the next. That's the substance of what we most desire, isn't it? But how shall this simple idea best be realized? Often a question that we have, for example, the kind of AA who is for simplicity. Terrified of anything organized, he tells us that AA is getting too complicated. He thinks money only makes trouble, committees only make dissension, elections only make politics, paid workers only make professionals, clubs only coddle slippers. Says he, let's get back to coffee and cakes by cozy firesides. If any alcoholics stray our way, let's look after them. But that's enough. Simplicity is our answer. So there's the people that you know, want things a little too simple. You know, he's making a mention here of let's get cozy by the fireside, right?
Right.
Now, this is almost 30 years ago now. But I remember somebody coming back. He was our GSR. Coming back from a conference that he was at. And one of the things that they were looking at was, where are all the old timers? You know, if you talk to somebody from the 50s and 60s who were sober in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, there were 10 old timers for every newcomer. You know, what happened is that dynamic had shifted around 1990 or in between 1990 and 95. And a lot of the old timers had disappeared. And so the question was posed to Alcoholics Anonymous, where are they going? Is there a pension program that we don't know about? You know, I mean, you know, is there a retirement party that we missed? People didn't understand where they were going. And what they found out was, a lot of the old timers, not all of them, but a lot of the old timers were starting little personal meetings, you know, with people that they had gotten very, very close to, and they were just having meetings with each other in their houses. And you know, people ask, well, why are you doing that? Well, I'm tired of hearing all the crud that everybody's sharing, you know? And mm-hmm. so me and Bill and Harry and Hank, you know, we meet up on Tuesday night over at my house, and we barbecue up some hamburgers and we have AA. And that was happening. Now, Bill is talking about that in this paragraph. Let's get back to Coffee and Cakes by Cozy Firesides, which is the way a lot of AA groups started that way. They started in somebody's house with three or four people. Let's get back to that. Well, our primary purpose is opposed to, you know, to secluding ourselves like that. Our primary purpose is to place ourselves where we can be of maximum usefulness to other alcoholics. And it's not going to be by the fireside, unfortunately. Now, you know, COVID hit and a lot of people ended up by the fireside. I can understand that. But there's a responsibility to carry the message. And I think if you get too simple, you're not going to be able to do that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, and I've fallen into this before. You said something a couple of shows ago about meetings that you had resented your way out of. And I love the way you put that, because I've been guilty of that, to where I was the one that actually sent me on my way. No one else did it. And I think when we get to a place where we're tired of hearing the same old thing, I think we really need to check ourselves, because the same old thing is just part of life, right? I mean, when I get up in the morning and pretty much what my ABCs are in the morning is the same thing I've been doing most of my life. You know, that's life, is the same old thing. And if we're going to welcome newcomers into a new way of living, then we've got to be willing to listen to the same old thing, because that's what they're bringing with them. And as soon as we start separating ourselves, then we have bless me clubs, right? And are we even talking about step work? It's just a good old boys meeting, and we're not doing the very thing that we learned that we needed to do in order to maintain a healthy citizenship in our community. We're not reaching out to anybody. I see this happening in churches. I see it happening in synagogues. I even see it happening in some service organizations like Rotary and Boy Scouts. It's a tendency. It's a human tendency. But we ought to be very vigilant about it and avoid it at all costs, I think.
You know, the spiritual life is a disciplined life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the negative connotation of discipline, but discipline is basically making an effort to take the actions to achieve, you know, specific outcomes, right? And I've moved around a lot. My wife and I have been put in a position where I had a job that was sending me around the country to different places. We've chosen to move probably 13 times since you've known me.
Wow.
You probably remember a lot of the moves, right? So whenever there's a move, a lot of times there's a new group. There's a new experience with a fellowship, and I've just become disciplined to you know, some of them seem to me to be better than others. Listen, they're all perfect, right?
Yeah.
But some of them seem to me to be better than others, and I've got to be disciplined about attending. And when I start to think to myself, oh my goodness, here he goes again. He's going to share the same thing. And, you know, I'm not hearing the recovery in this meet. You know, when that starts to happen, I got to mute that. And I got to understand, you know, it's better for me to have a positive experience than a negative experience within a group.
Mm.
My being within a group is not optional. you know what I mean?
Yes.
I am not going to separate from a group. And, my attitude and my outlook on the group can be poor or it can be good. But it's not optional that I don't be part of that group. So why, you know, why not, you know, make an effort to try to see the things that are good about a group.
Sure.
You know, so he says here, quite opposed to such halcyon simplicities is the AA promoter. Left to himself, he would bang the cannon and twang the lyre at every crossroad of the world. Millions for drunks, great AA hospitals, batteries of paid organizers, and publicity experts wielding all the latest paraphernalia of sound and script. Such would be our promoter's dream. This Bill has a way with language, I swear. You know, some of it is a bit antiquated, but
yeah,
but it's colorful.
It is.
I love the way he writes. So he says, "Yes, sir," he would bark. "My two-year plan calls for 1 million AA members by 1950. For one, I'm glad we have both conservatives and enthusiasts. They teach us much. The conservative will surely see to it that AA movement never gets overly organized, but the promoter will continue to remind us of our terrific obligation to the newcomer and to those hundreds of thousands of alcoholics still waiting all over the world to hear of AA. We shall naturally take the firm and safe middle course. AA has always violently resisted the idea of any general organization. Yet paradoxically, we have ever stoutly insisted upon organizing certain special services, mostly those absolutely necessary to effective and plentiful 12-step work. If, for instance, an AA group elects a secretary or a rotating committee, if an area forms an intergroup committee, if we set up a foundation, a general service office, or a grapevine, then we are organized for service. The AA book and pamphlets, our meeting places or and clubs, our dinners and regional assemblies, these are services too. Nor can we secure good hospital connections, properly sponsor new prospects, and obtain good public relations just by chance. People have to be appointed to look after these things, sometimes paid people. Special services are performed. You know, most of the time, what he's talking about here are not paid people. But, you know, I've been part of groups that have had I still do commitments at facilities.
Yeah.
You know, bringing the AA message in. But you know, we have to be aware of the opportunities for carrying the message. You know, the people that are involved in the general service work, you know, they're GSRs, DCMs, delegates, well, you know, all those positions really get an education in how we are to carry the message to the people who need to know about us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if all you do is go to meetings, you're going to have a perspective that's, you know, about 12 inches yeah. wide. If you get involved in some of these service structures, you start to see that there's many other areas of service that are necessary to cooperate with the professional community, to educate people that need to know what AA is and what AA isn't. There's prison work. There's work in treatment centers. There's all kinds of, there's literature committees. There's translation departments. And somebody said something to me the other day that was that I took kind of a little bit by surprise. You know, I've never really been a pamphlet fan. You know, there's a lot of pamphlets out there. Some of them I like better than others. You know, AA, A Member's Eye View, I like that. You know, there's a couple of them that I like, but most of them, I think, like, you know, why do you waste money and put this in the meetings? And somebody said, Chris, the pamphlets aren't for the people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous. The pamphlets are for the people who aren't in Alcoholics Anonymous and need to be.
Yeah.
you know, all of a sudden I'm like, I'm okay with the pamphlets now. You know right. what I mean? I'm not gonna throw them away like I used to in the meeting, because I didn't like them. The pamphlets are for the people who have not joined yet. You know?
Yeah.
And that was a neat perspective. That was a neat perspective for me to hear.
Back several years ago, can't remember what year it was now. I went to the World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. I decided that instead of doing what I usually did when I would go to big events like that and go to marathon meetings, I was going to go to some of these service structure committee meetings and see what the big boys were doing, right? I was absolutely amazed at how well put together and how well things were delivered. Everything from Robert's rules all the way to just the etiquette that was being respected in some of the committee meetings, it blew my mind. Because I had seen, on a smaller scale, I had seen, you know, wars break out, right? But at this world convention, it was like everybody was on the same page. I mean, even the skirting that was around the tables was perfectly ironed. It blew my mind. I was in awe. And I thought, you know what? I want to be in the middle of that stuff. It was talk about attraction rather than promotion. It changed my view on a lot of things. So anybody that's listening, if you ever have an opportunity to go to a world convention, you don't want to miss it. It is something else. Everything from the opening ceremonies to all the stuff that's going on. But dig deeper. Do more than just go to a marathon meeting. Plug into some of these other things. It's very eye-opening and educational and entertaining as well.
You know, Judy and Lou that we had on as guests a couple of weeks ago, they've been huge into service. They've been delegates, and they go to all the assemblies. I mean, they will get in a car and drive 9 hours across the country.
Wow.
To go to an assembly in Oklahoma. And then, you know, 3 months later, they're going to an assembly in Utah. And, you know, and they're very, very involved in it. And a lot of times, they have differing viewpoints from some of the other people that are, laying out a position or something, but they're in it, you know, they're deep in it. And I have a huge respect for them for doing so. I've remained unencumbered with those type of large service commitments. my personality is such that it would be incredibly difficult for me to be a part of that. It's not like I haven't tried. You know, I've been right. a GSR. You know, I've been a I've run the committees on cooperation with the professional community for our district. I've done some of those things, and I find that, you know, my skill set is best applied outside of that format. But it's certainly something I think anybody should try. And if it seems like your spirit speaks to you and you should be in this. Doing mm-hmm. it, we need good people in the service structure.
Yeah,
you know, and all 99% of these positions are not paid. You know, right. Sometimes you get your expenses paid, like you know, for going to an assembly or something. But for the most part, you know, these are for fun and for free.
Yep.
It says here, but by none of these special services has our spiritual or social activity, the great current of AA, ever been really organized or professionalized. Yet our recovery program has been enormously aided. While important, these service activities are very small by contrast with our main effort. As such facts and distinctions become clear, we shall easily lay aside our fears of blighting organization or hazardous wealth. As a movement, we shall remain comfortably poor, for our service expenses are trifling. With such assurances, we shall without doubt continue to improve and extend our vital lifelines of special service, to better carry our AA message to others, to make for ourselves a finer, greater society, and God willing, to assure Alcoholics Anonymous a long life and perfect unity. Mm. You know, this was a wonderful, wonderful article. I'm really familiar with the one that's in the book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, just because of the amount of 12 and 12 meetings I've gone to and the amount of times Tradition 9 gets read in those meetings. This is the same material, really, but it's put in a different, a different context, a different group of writings. And I really enjoyed it.
Hey, Chris, have you noticed how often he refers to money and cash flow? Almost in every one of these articles.
Yeah. Yeah, I told you around this time even earlier, he was under attack,
right?
You know, by people in AA about, you know, he's a crook and, you know, he's profiting off of AA. And,
right.
I got to tell you, even if he was, he really wasn't. But even if he was, I'd have been okay with it. I swear, the amount of wonderful material he put together and this life-saving program, Alcoholics Anonymous, that he was the principal architect of, I wouldn't have begrudged him, some type of a stipend,
Yeah.
But he was very, very touchy about the money. I think if he was aware, if he was still alive and he was aware of what the prudent reserve is for the general service office, he would have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Large it has grown, because if you read any of these spiritual articles, it's basically saying, keep it small, keep it small, keep it small. And, around the time he died in 1970-71, I'll bet the rent wasn't that much in New York. I bet it was a couple $100 a month. You know, but the expenses today are ridiculous with a lot of, a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous. And with that large amount of money is going to come criticism and problems. And I think they have.
Yep.
I'll just give you one, and I'm not criticizing, right? But I don't think there's office space more expensive on the planet than New York City. Why are we in New York City with our general service office?
Good point.
Why aren't we in Ohio? Why are we in Ohio? It's because the board members like New York City, but that's just one example.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I wish this was more of a real spiritual principle within the structure, but I don't really see that it is. But anyway, I don't judge.
Never.
I don't criticize at all. I believe accuracy is important, but I don't judge. All right, so let's move on to Tradition 10. I'm going to read the long form of Tradition 10. It's not very long. Tradition 10. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatsoever. The groups can't. They shouldn't get involved in politics. There shouldn't be Republican and Democratic groups. There shouldn't be Catholic and Protestant groups. You know what I mean? We're alcohol. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and an alcohol history, right? It's really the only requirement for membership. So I think it's pretty important. Now, personally, how do I apply this tradition personally? If you don't know me really well, if you aren't one of my absolute best friends, you're not going to know if I'm a Republican or a Democrat. You're not going to know if I go to church or not. You're not going to know if I'm a Methodist or an Episcopalian or a Catholic. You're just not going to know that stuff. You're not going to know if I'm for gun control or I'm for the Second Amendment. Yeah, and you're just not going to know any of that stuff, because when I'm dealing with alcoholism, alcoholics, I don't want to cut myself off from you by being different or being in opposition to something that you feel very, very strongly about. So I stay back. And I just talk about the things that we can identify with, we can agree on, you know, and that's kind of how I apply this principle personally. Now, certainly the groups can't, you know, express any outside opinion, but that's just me. What are your feelings on that, Monty?
Well, I think that's wisdom. I think that's just plain good old fashioned wisdom. But I have experienced losing a relationship, a good friendship, or at least one that was on the way to developing into a good friendship, because of differences in political candidates. And this was several years ago, and this gentleman and I had become close friends. In fact, at one point, he was actually, he put the flooring into the office part of our studio. And he was really going kind of sideways on stuff during one of the smoke breaks. And I just let him have it. Some things came out of my mouth that you will very rarely in my life ever hear. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I knew that I had blown it, right? And things went along okay after that. I mean, I made amends to the guy. But then when he got engaged, he made it very clear that I was not welcome at his wedding. And that relationship never did heal. All over an opinion, right? That really, I mean, it was a smoke break. It wasn't in the meeting, but it was in the fellowship. And I learned a very valuable lesson that day, that you're right. You know, unless people know you on a different level than the AA meeting or fellowship or even the camp out, it might be best just to leave that stuff at the door. I mean, I paid a high price. I lost a friend. Not really willing to do that these days. I mean, if I have to take a stand for who I believe God is in my life, and I'm asked to denounce that, that's a different story. But I've never been asked to do that. But yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I mentioned it about keeping those things out of the rooms at my home group here recently. And everybody was on board with it. And I think that's one of the reasons that everybody is so tight and does get along and is so welcoming to the newcomer in that home group, because people just don't bring that stuff up.
You know, it's a deadly thing to cut the room in half.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we just can't do it. We just can't do it. So, all right, let's go to September 1948, Tradition 10. To most of us, Alcoholics Anonymous has become as solid as the Rock of Gibraltar. We like to believe that it will soon be as well-known and just as enduring as that historic landmark. We enjoy this pleasant conviction because nothing has yet occurred to disturb it. We reason that we must hang together or die. Hence, we take for granted our continued unity as a movement. But should we? Though God has bestowed upon us great favors, and though we are bound by stronger ties of love and necessity than most societies, is it prudent to suppose that automatically these great gifts and attributes shall be ours forever? If we are worthy, we shall probably continue to enjoy them. So the real question is, how shall we always be worthy of our present blessings? Seen from this point of view, our AA traditions are those attitudes and practices by which we may deserve, as a movement, a long life and a useful one. To this end, none could be more vital than our 10th tradition, for it deals with the subject of controversy, serious controversy. So we must deserve our unity. This is really the first time that he's put that into writing that I've ever read, right? We must be deserving of this unity. And for us to be deserving of this unity, there's certain spiritual principles and practices that we're gonna need to follow. And controversy is going to, allowing controversy to brew within a group is going to make us undeserving of survival, is the flip side of the coin that he's talking about here. On the other side of the world, millions have died, even recently, in religious dissension. Other millions have died in political controversy. The end is not yet. Nearly everybody in the world has turned reformer. Each group, society, and nation is saying to the other, you must do as we say or else. Political controversy and reform by compulsion have reached an all-time high, and eternal, seemingly, are the flames of religious dissension. You know, that's a powerful paragraph there. You know, we're witnessing it. We're witnessing it today with Ukraine, and yeah, there's a number of political and societal tragedies that are happening now because of strict positions people are taking. And it's funny, you go anywhere in the world. I know a lot of people that have gone over to Russia. And I know people that have done Alcoholics Anonymous in Saudi Arabia, you know, Turkey, a number of these different places, because, you know, a lot of the C4 people that you know, sure, you've met, Monty.
Yeah.
You know, they go all over the place, right? And every single place is the same. You walk in that door and you are accepted and you are part of and you are equal with everybody else in the room. Now, you can walk outside and it's a whole different story, but within that room there's like a spiritual umbrella that just covers that particular entity in love and tolerance for others. It's just amazing. And it's like that everywhere, you know, within healthy, informed groups around the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this tradition is going a long way to help that happen.
I want to interject here because I'm thinking about, we just, you know, the Buffalo Bills just had a sports figure who got injured, and, I watched as the ultra conservative media and the ultra liberal media came together and dropped all their issues to cover this guy's getting well and getting the help he needed and covering his family. All of a sudden, none of that mattered for at least a day. You know, if you see a guy drowning in the ocean, you don't stop and ask what political flavor he is. You don't stop and ask even if he's what sexual orientation he is. You don't ask what religion he is. You don't, you jump in. You just do. I don't know anybody that wouldn't. And aren't we faced with the same thing in a fellowship like Alcoholics Anonymous and some of the other 12-step groups? People are drowning. We don't have time to sit around and take an inventory of their particular personal flavors in order to help them. I think it's ridiculous if we do that. And I've seen it happen before, but not a whole lot. But boy, it sure happens in other aspects of life, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt. It says here, being like other men and women, how can we expect to remain forever immune from these perils? Probably we shall not. At length, we must meet them all. We cannot flee from them, nor ought we try. If these challenges do come, we shall, I am sure, go out to meet them gladly and unafraid. That will be the acid test of our worth. Our best defense, this surely lies in the formation of a tradition respecting serious controversy so powerful that neither the weakness of persons nor the strain and strife of our troubled times can harm Alcoholics Anonymous. We know that AA must continue to live, or else many of us and many of our fellow alcoholics throughout the world will surely resume the hopeless journey to oblivion. That must never be. As though by some deep and compelling instinct, we have thus far avoided serious controversies. That's true, a deep instinct. I told you about all these meetings around the world, right?
Yeah.
I think each of them have a deep instinct to remain in the protective spiritual cocoon of absence from controversy, or sure, absence from political or religious positions or whatever. There's just something that, you know, automatically happens. I think it's God. Save minor and healthy growing pains, we are at peace among ourselves. And because we have thus far adhered to our sole aim, the whole world regards us favorably. So in 1948, he's saying the whole world regarded Alcoholics Anonymous favorably. And I think, I don't know that that's absolutely true today. There's a lot of professional organizations. There's a lot of medical professionals. There's a lot of psychiatric professionals that have huge criticisms to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, that's kind of a shame. But we also have a tradition where, you know, we're not going to engage in any of that controversy. We're going to stay outside of it. We're not even going to comment on it, you know, when asked. But I'm not sure we are universally respected,
right,
as we were in 1948. May God grant us the wisdom and the fortitude ever to sustain an unbreakable unity. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Unbreakable unity. Listen. We do enough damage on our own. By resenting ourselves out of a meeting or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
We want the group to be a safe space. We want the group to be safe. We want newcomers to come in and feel like they're not going to be shunned, or they're not going to be criticized out of the group.
Mm-hmm.
This tradition really, I think, makes it a safe space.
When we engage in controversy, we lose our effectiveness, I think, and we end up possibly losing the new prospect. I watched in a meeting years ago. I watched a man who I was the only one. It was a large meeting. I was the only one in that meeting that knew this guy's profession. He happened to be a pastor of a church that was out of the county, and he intentionally came to this meeting because it wasn't in his county, because he wanted to protect his anonymity. He had never been to an AA meeting before. This is the first time he admitted that he was struggling, and he walked into that meeting and sat down, and the second or third person that shared with somebody that should have known better, had been around for quite a while, and decided they were going to just bash the church and anybody that was in ministry and how horrible preachers were and all of that, right? Well, thank God this guy had the wherewithal to let that roll off his shoulders. But who knows about the next guy? You know, I've often said that the two entities mm-hmm. we tend to criticize in 12-step meetings are two of our biggest supporters, the faith community and the treatment community. And I'm like, we're throwing them under the bus a lot, and yet they're the ones that are backing us up. you know, we're going to open our doors. You can meet here. Yeah, we want you to go to AA. We want it to be part of your treatment. I mean, and yet we slam them, you know. So I think we should check ourselves sometimes when it comes to that. I really do. And I just know, again, this last sentence, may God grant us the wisdom and fortitude. Andy Stanley, a quote from one of my favorite authors, says, before you act, what you want to do is you want to say to yourself, based on my past experience, my current circumstances, and my future hopes and dreams, what's the wise thing to do? Not what's right, not what's fair, not what's legal. What's the wise thing to do? And you know, the good book says, if you ask for wisdom, God will grant it to you. And that last sentence, that's what we're doing. May God grant us the wisdom. And I think if we will do that when it comes to these things, when we're tempted to spout off our opinions that are outside issues, God will grant us the wisdom and we'll zip our lip.
Amen to that, Monty.
You better watch out. I get the preaching. All right, Chris, thank you so much for another episode. I appreciate it so much, my friend.
All right, Monty, next week we finish up the traditions, and then we move forward with some diverse kind of writings.
Yes.
Which I'm sure we're going to find it.
I'm looking forward to it. All right, my friends, listen, if you'd like to email us, our email address is take12, that's the number 12, radio@comcast.net. Don't forget, you can subscribe to all of our shows for fun and for free on all major podcasting platforms at take12radio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Simply search for Take 12 Recovery Radio. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S. and the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof.